Life Conversations Radio. Be the change you want to see.
Hi, this is Jack Armstrong, author of Lessons from the Source, a spiritual guidebook for navigating life's journey. You're listening to Life Conversations Radio.
Life Conversations. It's all about positivity. It's all about self-empowerment. It's all about life conversation.
to Living in the Yes with the Reverend Dr. Deborah L. Johnson. We were ushered into this sacred moment with David Pamal and Mitten. You can find all of their music on iTunes. Such a handy place to find great artists. And the song, the meditation that we were listening to was Om Kama Mantra. Oh, a nice, nice way to say welcome to your holidays. I am Celeste Morgan, and it is my pleasure to welcome you into the sacred space. Also, to let you know the telephone number in which you can participate in this conversation. The number is 347-426-3346. And don't forget to press 1 on your keypad. I also want to thank you in the archives for going back and re-listening to this amazing show. And let you know that if you're in the chat room, you can sign on to Blog Talk Radio so that you can participate. Otherwise, we welcome you as a guest. And I feel all that loving energy on the phone lines. You are welcome to. And without further ado, please welcome Reverend Dr. Deborah L. Johnson.
Best. Oh, let me just say, I forgot to do something, Revy. I apologize for that. We had some soft technical issues. I think it's really reminiscent of the energy of the hustle and bustle, whether we want to opt in or opt out. There is this fanatic, or for, you know, if you want to join the ride, there's a ride going on right now. And, you know, I'm feeling it technically. Life Coach today is joining us. He's making his way in, but in the meantime, if we've had some bumpy ride getting into the show, well, chill out, because we've got the remedy for you right here, right now. It was a reminder to put a pause in for the cause and listen to Remedy talk to us about Christ consciousness tonight.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I am just so excited, as always, to be on this show. And as we start to approach what we know of as the holidays, the Christmas season and Hanukkah season and Kwanzaa and so many things that we celebrate right now, we get into a lot of angst sometimes, particularly around the commodification of these holidays. We just got through Thanksgiving and the quote-unquote Black Friday and the shopping frenzy. And I'm all for people getting their needs met. And I think it's important that we reground a little bit. I make these references in time because it's where we are in this moment. But whenever you're listening to this, the spiritual truths that we speak of are transcendent of time. This notion of Christ consciousness, that Christ consciousness is not to be confused with a person. Sometimes we say Jesus Christ as though Christ was Jesus' last name. Christ is a designation, and it's not a designation that is reserved for any one particular person. The notion of a Christ is when one understands oneself to be connected to the divine and a living embodiment of that. Which raises a very good question, and I know that it's a bone of contention in many theological circles about the role of Jesus within all of this, and is Jesus the divine exception? Is Jesus the one and the only Christ? Or is Jesus a wayshore? Is he a living, breathing example of what it means to be a Christ and guiding us towards the path of discovering that within our own selves. The idea that each of us is a Christ, awakened or not, doesn't take anything away from the personage of Jesus. And I realize that some of the things that I'm saying now may be considered to be a bit heretical, but all I would ask you to do is just to search your own soul. Just to search your own soul. Now, there are some passages that I feel incumbent to read to you that are from the book, The Sacred Yes, which is the first volume of the Letters from the Infinite series published by Sounds True. These are letters that have been revealed to me through the years. I transcribe them, and they're in the form now of letters. There's a particular letter towards the end of this Volume 1 book called I'm Always Begetting My Only Begotten. That's what that particular letter has been entitled. And, you know, this one was a real turnaround to me. Every now and then there'll be a letter that is what I call just absolutely epic. And this is one of them in terms of the understanding that it gave me. I'm going to be reading some excerpts out of this. And this is a letter that's basically to all of us, and it's particularly to the ones of us that consider ourselves to be part of the Christian faith or the Christian tradition. The message is not exclusively to those individuals or about them. It is addressed within that particular context. This notion of what this means to be a Christ and what this means to have a Christ consciousness is extremely, extremely important. And the thing to understand here is that the idea of a Christ consciousness is this awareness that one is connected to everything. I'm going to be reading some excerpts, and these excerpts are not in any particular order. I'm just going as my eye is telling me in this letter to read. It says, the Christ consciousness is not for the purpose of sitting above the people, of judging them in their smallness, not even in their idiosyncrasies. The Christ consciousness is tempered with love, compassion, empathy, tenderness, yea, grace. It is these qualities and characteristics that keep it from being haughty and judgmental. There is an understanding that the answer to these human dilemmas are not to separate and to segregate oneself out so as to make distinctions between the so-called good and the so-called bad. The solution is to be fully present, to share what one knows and understands. This is the salvation. The salvation is in the understanding of the availability of the Christship for all. I have given this awareness as a gift, and whosoever will partake of it will understand that they are living, breathing spiritual beings in the flesh. I have given them this understanding not so they can be condemning and judgmental, but so that they can be saved from the ignorance of the consciousness that flourishes when they operate strictly from their human egotistical standpoint. It is this egocentric thinking that destroys things. Going to another place earlier in the letter. When one understands that one is a Christ, there is an awareness that one is eternal in that moment. The sense of perishing does not exist for those who understand this, because they live a life that transcends loss, decay, corrosion, delusion, convolution, and extinction. They understand that they have everlasting life. This understanding of everlasting life is a very present awareness. It's not about an understanding that after they leave the flesh form, they will go on to some afterlife. This concept of not perishing and having everlasting life is about now. It's about this incarnation, what you would consider to be this life. How much of your energy is taken up trying to hide, protect, defend, salvage, hold on to all of your stuff? How much energy is wasted in these endeavors? If your energy is going towards these things, then you cannot be available to me. If you're not available to me, then you're not available for life, for the process of everlasting life. This passage is not merely about a future promise that a soul will raise up from the dead body in the grave. This is a promise of life now, of joy, of happiness, of beauty, of passion, and aliveness. Yes, I have so loved the world that I have given it myself. And whosoever can accept their self as myself will live my life now. Tell this to the people, my children. I speak to you in human terms so that you will understand. I grieve so for all of you who are missing your life now by waiting for something else, something later, living your lives on a layaway plan. Live today. Accept my love. Today, accept my love. Today, I want to read a couple of more. Everybody take a deep breath. This notion of being a begotten son. It's talking about passage John 3:16, that for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, and whosoever believeth in him shall not perish but have everlasting life. It's referring back to this passage and jumping around in this letter. It says this notion of being a begotten Son is extremely important. It is important not so much because it made the one being symbolically referred to so different from anyone else. Rather, the point of being described as a begotten son was to remind people of the beginning reference point, which is, in fact, me, the creator of all living things, the one that is referred to scripturally as the Father. Here again, this genderization of me is not my doing. I am everything. I am all male, and I am all female, all in one. It is impossible to make a distinction along these lines. When one refers to me from the sense of being a father, a mother, a shepherd, a lord, the light of their life, these are references that you humans use to connect with me in particular ways. However, I cannot be cut up, chopped up, fragmented, segmented according to your sensory perceptions. I am the all and all. Anything that is begotten of me is also all and all, because I am all and all. Any offspring of mine must be wholly female, as much as it is wholly male. Because whole is the only way that I can, in fact, come. The idea of the only begotten has been most troublesome in your society. You have taken this only to be an exclusive term. I never deal in exclusivity. I do sometimes deal in distinction from the standpoint of gradations of spiritual awareness and understanding. However, even these gradations are never for the purpose of leaving anyone out. If I ever make a distinction, it's for clarification, so that anyone and everyone can see how he or she may in fact move up, transcend to a higher state of consciousness and awareness. As I said in an earlier message to you, my reverend daughter, there's often confusion between Jesus as a person, a living, breathing representation of Christ consciousness, and the concept of Christ itself. When he is referenced in what you know as John 3:16, the one being referenced is Christ, not merely Jesus, a man. This Christ consciousness is the only thing I can beget. I'm going to say that again. This Christ consciousness is the only thing I can beget. I have not begotten just one individual on the face of the earth. I could never do anything that small, that minute, that particular. What I have available for one is by definition available to all, because that is my spiritual nature. The only thing that can be begotten of me is this Christ awareness. It is the only thing that comes from me. The only thing that can be begotten of me is this Christ awareness. It is the only thing that comes from me. This is not just about a genetic DNA. Get beyond your human sibling rivalries in this notion. Stop making stepchildren out of your spiritual siblings. Stop this notion in which you proclaim, I am of the Father, but somehow you've been adopted. I really have the lineage, but you somehow are just living in the house. It's I who have the inherited right to all that is of the parent, the father in this metaphorical instance. Such haughtiness is unbecoming to a Christ consciousness. It says in John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. Oh, yes. This is, in fact, the truth. I love the world. I love it because it is of me. It is my creation, and I have loved it so much that I have, in fact, infused the entire world with my consciousness. And the moment that any of you understand that you are one with me, then you live in this Christ consciousness. Just breathe. Just breathe on this a moment. Breathe. Each of us is Christ. Each of us, every single great spiritual leader has tried to tell us this. Tried to explain this to it. I'm I'm using it in Christian jargon, but you'll find the same thing. You'll find the same thing in Islam. You'll find it in Native American traditions. You'll find it in Judaism. You'll find it in Hinduism. You'll find it in the Yoruba tribes. You'll find it anywhere, that we're not just flesh and bone. Who and what we are is a part of creation itself. The Creator has made us out of itself, infused us with its power to co-create, to love, to care. And it is not sacrilegious to think of ourselves in this way. I contend that it's sacrilegious not to. And on that note, we'll take a break. It's time for our break. Well, we're having a few technical difficulties, so I will continue on. And I'll wait till they come in and let us know that it's time for our break. I want everybody to just breathe a moment. To breathe. How exciting is this? How exciting is this? To know that there is something about us that is so great, grand, and glorious. And that I really do believe with all of my heart, when I look at the life of Jesus, when I look at the life of the great mystics, that all of them were asking us to awaken, to realize not only our oneness with God, but to realize our oneness with each other. That is our charge. That is our duty, that is our responsibility, to care for the planet and to care for each other as though we are, in fact, one. Just imagine, how different would your life be? How different would your life be if deep down inside you really, 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 really believed that you were more than your finances, that you were more than your relationships, more than your health condition, more than your job, more than your socio-demographic profile, more than your race, more than your gender? What if for a moment we really grasped that none of that stuff limited us? None of it limits us. All people, the society can put all kind of obstacles in our way, but there is nothing that can stop us from loving. There's nothing that can stop creativity from flowing through us. That there's nothing that can stop us from praising and rejoicing and realizing that God is good and that life is good. There's nothing that can stop us from uplifting each other and supporting each other and praising our God and finding the good in all kinds of circumstances and conditions. Nothing. Nothing stands in the way of that. Can you imagine how much more you would accomplish? Can you imagine how much more joy there would be in your life? How much more power you would feel? How much more passion that you would feel? How estrangement would go down? How much more patience you would have? Can you just imagine for a moment? Mm. I'm more than this. I'm more than flesh and bone. One of the songs we sing a lot in my church is This Joy. This joy I have, the world didn't give it to me. The world didn't give it, and the world can't take it away. When we forget that each and every one of us is a Christ, we're letting ourselves be defined externally. We're letting it be defined by the circumstances, by the conditions, by the people, the places, and things that we are involved in. Sometimes we can get so mired in it. Sometimes the world is just too much with us. Sometimes our Christ nature gets eclipsed in our minds by the clouds of confusion and all the things that we've been thinking about, the worry and the doubt. Sometimes our Christ consciousness gets eclipsed by our ego. Sometimes we get a little too puffed up with ourselves because the ego works both ways. The ego wants to take credit no matter what. If the ego can't take credit for our success, it wants to take credit for our failure, but it's still puffing itself up. Oh, look what a big mess I made. What if you really grew to understand you're not big enough to mess up your own life? You're not big enough to mess up your own life. The best that you can do is put yourself on a different route, put yourself on another path. But there's not a single path that doesn't lead to God. We can find God on the mountaintop, top of the Himalayas, find God in the gutter. The only thing our choices do is change the landscape and the scenery. Some routes are just a little prettier than others. Some routes are a little lonelier than others. Some routes are a little cushier than others. But there's not a road that we can possibly take where we are not journaling. We are not journeying. We are not traveling with the One. It reminds me of that very famous poem about footprints in the sand. And it's the story goes that this person is walking along the beach and they're noticing the footprints in the sand. They're having this very private conversation with the divine. And they're asking God, you know, why is it? Why is it that sometimes I see two sets of footprints, and then in my most forlorn states, when I'm having the most trouble, there's only one set of footprints, and they're questioning God, you know, why is it that you have abandoned me in my worst times? God simply responds back, oh, no, 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 that when you only see one set of footprints, they're mine, that I am carrying you. I am carrying you. This is what the Christ consciousness knows. The Christ consciousness is aware that every time we think, we're using the mind of God. Every time we speak, we're using the breath of God. Every time we love, we're loving with the heart of God. We don't have our own anything. That everything that we do, we're just using what's here. That we're grateful that we have an opportunity to share it, to remake it, to remold it. But we're acutely aware that there's only one source and we're not it. That the people, places, and things around us are just resources. The source is there, they just resource. And we do not get confused. That Christ awareness, that Christ consciousness is not confused. We know that we are one with the source, but we know that we ourselves are not of the source. It's like the drop of ocean to the sea, where we're not the entire ocean, but there's nothing in that drop of sea that is not pure ocean. We're like a little drop of ocean to the sea. We're not everything that God is. We're not the whole roaring ocean. But there's nothing about our makeup. There's nothing about us that is not pure spirit. We are pure spirit. Just breathe that in for a moment. We are pure spirit. Spirit is free. Let's take the shackles off our minds. Let's take the shackles off our feet. Take them off our hands. Take them off our hearts. We're free. We're free to grow. We're free to learn, to transform, to become more of what we already are. Life is a come-as-you-are party. This Christ consciousness is, it's not something that we earn. You can't buy it. Can't borrow it. It isn't given to us for having done something good or having done the right thing. It's who we are. It's who we are at the core of our being. The only thing that we have to do is just to recognize it. The only thing that we have to do is just remember it, to honor it, to live, and to act like we know that that's who we are. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that absolutely amazing? It's already who we are. We don't have to apologize for being human. We don't have to do something else. We don't have to join something, learn something, say something. But all we have to do is just accept who we are at a very deep core level. And it's all there. It's all there. We go running outside of ourselves, thinking that we're flawed, thinking that there's something wrong with us, thinking that there's something that we have to become other than who it is that we are. No. There's another paragraph in this letter that I've been reading that I just want to share with you. It says, in regard to this notion of never perishing and having everlasting life, I've explained that those who are aware of and stay in their Christ consciousness transcend the temporal, transitory, relative outer world They understand that they are living their eternality now. The other extremely important aspect of this understanding is that when they go through their human trials and tribulations, there is an awareness that they will rise above them, that there is a power within them that is transcendent. The outer world never has the final say upon their lives. They know that they will, in fact, resurrect. This is meant both literally and metaphorically. The human self must die daily in order for it to come into its full Christ awareness. This dying is in the sense of the letting go, the releasing, the surrendering of the hopes, dreams, cares, fears, anxieties, worries, expectations. And just as there is a daily dying of the old human self, ways, perceptions, activities, beliefs, etc., there is a daily resurrecting. It is this process of resurrecting that creates the window of understanding, embracing, and living one's true Christ self. This is something that must be understood. This is not merely about overcoming. It is about being something that one is by one's nature. It's not the overcoming that makes one a Christ. It's the other way around. Because one is a Christ, one can, in fact, overcome. This is not merely a which comes first, the chicken or the egg dilemma. This is a very important cause and effect relationship. You humans tend to believe that if you just go through enough trials and tribulations and keep seeing me on the other side, then one day you will wake up as a Christ, or at least a saved. However, it is the other way around. If you keep a vigilance in remembering who you are in Christhood, then the transcendent will just be a residual byproduct. Be there all of the time. When we know, we will transcend. When we know, we will transcend. In another letter called Greater Work Will You Do, it says that Christ is a consciousness. Christ is an illumined, awakened, enlightened state of consciousness that recognizes the true lineage of humanity as being divine. Christ is not something that is born. It cannot be bought, sold, bartered. It simply is. If you want to understand your Christhood, then you must be willing to accept the isness of it all. This does not take a lot of pomp and circumstance. It does not take a great deal of ritual and rhetoric. It just is. Your Christ consciousness just is. Let's just all stop and breathe on that. Do we need to take our break now?
We've been given a break. Oh, my God. It's been interesting behind the scenes, but yes, we are resurrected in this moment. And yes, we will take a break and continue. Thank God for the Christ consciousness.
Indeed. You are listening to Living in the Yes with Reverend Dr. Deborah L. Johnson. The call-in number is 347-426-3346. And don't forget to press 1 on your keypad to join us in this conversation. So we will be right back right after these brief messages.
This is Ade Anifowoshi. We are moving through the time of the year that inspires us to love, to give, to share, and be thankful. Sometimes some of us may be feeling sad and lonely. Whatever it is you're feeling, I say, let it be. It is all part of the human experience. Embrace your humanity. The more you embrace your humanity, the more in touch you'll be with your divinity. So I want to encourage you today to say yes to life. Say yes to love. Say yes to you. You are so much more powerful than you can imagine. Ralph Waldo Emerson said, "What lies behind you and what lies in front of you pales in comparison to what lies inside of you." Breathe it in. You are beautiful. You are loved. You are important, and you make a difference. My prayer for you today is that your light shines so bright that you see yourself as a divine idea of God. I love you. Happy holy days. Peace and blessings.
Ready to live in the yes? Join me, Rev D, the Reverend Dr. Deborah Johnson, here Tuesday evenings, 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Pacific. Call in with your questions and comments as together we explore spiritual qualities and learn practical tools that unleash our spiritual power. We mix in some music, spoken word, readings, prophetic utterances. You want in on this? Living in the Yes, 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Pacific, right here on Light Conversations Radio.
Yo, yo, yo!
From the playground of life, the play experience. 'Tis the season that brings passion, laughter, joy, love, sharing gifts, memories, healing, and new beginnings. All of which breathes new life into the play experience with yours truly, Hombasa Sophira, every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. In the spirit of this season of loving and giving here on Life Conversations Radio, I have a gift for you. Claim your gift at Ombasa.com. Just click Holiday Gifts from Ombasa. See you on the playground, the play experience, Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern. I'll be there with bells on.
Happy holidays from the playground of life.
Life Conversations Radio. Be the change you want to see.
Hi, this is Jack Armstrong, author of Lessons from the Source, a spiritual guidebook for navigating life's journey. You're listening to Life Conversations Radio.
Welcome back to Living in the Yes with Reverend Dr. Deborah L. Johnson. She's discussing Christ consciousness tonight. We also have some other places where Rev D is going to be, but I think we're going to save that for the other break because there's still some phenomenal information that I know you want to hear from her and tap into. We make sure we'll let you know about where she's going to be. But in the meantime, let's welcome her back. Welcome back, Rev D.
Well, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm good.
Good. Are we able to take callers?
Absolutely. We have listeners on the phone lines and in the chat room, but I think they've been engrossed in the conversation.
All right.
I do have some questions for you if you're ready for that.
Yeah, surely. And why don't we give the number out, too?
Absolutely. The call-in number to join this amazing conversation about Christ consciousness is 347-426-3346. And if you're already on phone lines, all you got to do is press 1, and that's our way of knowing that you want to come and ask your question, share what Christ consciousness means to you. Even if you've been hearing it all these years and you don't even know what it means, I mean, this is the place where you can have that conversation.
That's right. Every question is a worthwhile question. And don't feel like the sky is going to fall down if you ask if you ask a question that's really been burning on your heart.
So, Ravdi, this is my question around Christ consciousness and a societal issue that I experience personally, and I see a lot of other people jumping in this game too. So what I'm going to ask you is a question almost in the frame of, what would Jesus do? But I really want to know, how can I embody the Christ consciousness to just do that with my natural state of being? Here is the situation. Now, there are two movies that are coming out, because you know me, I'm all about cinema and imagery and images and who gets to play the hero in the movies. The first movie that's coming out is Exodus, and there's a really big issue that all of the characters are white. Now, we're not going to get caught up in the race conversation. No, people get nervous. That's not where my question is. I want to know about how to have a Christ consciousness around that, around a time in 2014. The question for me right now isn't even about that. I really just want to go to the source of the story and the scripture, because if you look there, I'm like, well, Zipporah is black, right? And is it Christ consciousness to get caught up in that? Like, well, what would Jesus do around that? Like, hey, those people don't look like my people in the family. Throw it all away. How do you deal with that? I'm done.
No, but here's the thing. Okay. It's that idea of before something. Use these kinds of opportunities as strategic opportunities to enter into dialogues. A movie theater, a movie production company is under no legal obligation to give accurate portrayals of anybody that it puts out there. It may be under moral, or we may think ethical, but it's not. Okay, I'll give you an example before I talk specifically about that one. Some people might have seen The Butler. Did you happen to catch that movie?
Yeah, I did.
Yes, I did, and okay. I own it.
So The Butler was based upon a true story, and it was a play for a number of years. And The Butler is the story of this man who was the butler for, I think, 8 presidents consecutively. He's a modern-day character. Well, if you go online, which I like to do sometimes, where they do the accuracy checks, there were some very interesting things. Like, the son that was the pivotal son the one who became the professor and all of the rest of that, and the juxtaposition of his son's life against his own life. Okay, that son never existed. He didn't even have that son. He only had one son, and that son did not die in Vietnam. Furthermore, the wife never drank. She was not an alcoholic at all. And I remember being really frustrated with that one because Oprah Winfrey plays the part. And she plays it so well that if you didn't know better, you would think that that was the case. And it felt to me like such a defamation of this woman's character who was not a drinker. Okay? And I remember really struggling with this. You know, and it says that it's, and you know, all these other things, that it's based upon, you know, these sort of fact things. So you have a similar situation with Moses, this story, the Exodus, or whatever it's being called. And every time one of these things comes out, this gives us a chance to start a discussion, not just in criticism of the movie, but what are the real facts? What are the real facts? This is where you do a kind of did you know campaign. People are out looking at that movie and they're looking at it like, did you know? Did you know? Like, hey, well, did you know that Moses married a sister? Did you know that? You know, did you know this? Did you know that? And that gets a buzz going. Oh, really? Really? Like? Then they pass it on to somebody else. They pass it on to somebody else. And nobody would even been thinking about Moses if the story hadn't come out. So you use these, strategically use these opportunities as a chance to put out the truth. That's one. Two, sometimes there just needs to be some good old organizing around imagery and portrayals, exclusion, you know, defamation. I was thinking about this the other day, about how when I was a kid, if there was somebody black on TV, you get on the phone. That's the first thing you did. You call up your relatives. Woo, girl, look at Channel 4. That's a color woman on TV. No, yeah, that's a color woman on TV. You know, it was a big deal. That was like a really big deal. Well, I look at the magazines now where Oprah has this unprecedented, her face on every color. And I love me some Oprah now. Her face on every cover. And yet, Nat King Cole's wife struggled really hard to be able to be a cover because black women weren't considered to be beautiful enough. We weren't considered to be universal enough to grace the cover of a national, you know, magazine. Things do change, but not without the enlightenment. Not without the enlightenment. So at moments like this, and I know this is going to, you know, be a hard pill for a lot of people to swallow, forgive them, for they know not what they do. I'm not saying that there isn't some conscious manipulation, but they really, really, really do not understand the ramifications of these constant portrayals and the exclusion. But use it as an opportunity. I remember I did the same thing with March of the Penguins, which was the base of Happy Feet, the little animated movie. Did either of you happen to see March of the Penguins?
I haven't seen that
yet.
No,
but I saw Happy Feet.
Okay, well, March of the Penguins presented itself like a heterosexual manifesto.
Wait a minute, hold on. I remember seeing that. Yes, I saw that. Yeah, that's the one where Morgan Freeman narrated it. That's the one you're talking about?
Yes. What they didn't bother to tell you is that penguins have the largest percentage of same-sex relationships of any species. Like 14% with female penguins.
Wow.
Similar with the males, where if a male loses the egg, he actually shares his egg with another male, and they both nurse and share and share that egg. Mm. But you would have never known it.
Right.
You would have never known it because who gets to tell the story?
Mm-hmm.
And all I'm saying is that don't get mad exclusively. Like, don't let that be the only path that we get mad because other people didn't tell the story. Take advantage of the spotlight that they have created to tell the story and to call the questions. It's okay to put them out there as questions. Right into the studios. You can do all kind of campaigns, whatever it is that you want to do, but make sure that you're not just striking out and making somebody bad. Look at it as that you are unenlightened. And like offering yourself up as a service. Let me help correct some things here. As long as people are looking at this movie, hey, here's some other stuff they can now learn. Because we know the power of these images. And for people who don't read and who don't study, that's all they're ever going to know.
Mm-hmm.
Disney comes out with some Pocahontas, and that's all they're ever going to know. With all of its inaccuracies.
Mm-hmm.
Tell the truth. The trick is, don't get into the otherness. Don't get into the otherness. Don't get sucked into the rage. Don't get sucked into the drama. Don't get stuck in the us versus them. Judgment begets judgment. Take the moral high ground.
I can do that.
Sure you can.
I'm seeing a dream come true right now. I mean, and I mean it. I always wanted to see Annie. Well, I always envisioned Annie as a little black girl, though I mm-hmm. really, really love the white girl in the musical, and I love Annie. That's my girl. But I always knew that there was room enough for a little girl that looked like me. And that's
sure.
happening. And that, for me, I'm excited about that and about that image. And I'm just going to enjoy it, not like a critic, but like the little girl who always put herself, superimposed herself in the image that was on the screen. Because I could always be the hero in my own story, even if you put different players in it. I remember that thing about there's a black person on TV.
Mm-hmm.
We were doing that in the 70s.
Oh, yeah. Woo, that was exciting. Woo! Shout out. Turn on the TV. Turn on the TV.
I remember that, yes.
And and I'm saying these things to say is that for all that we have to go, I'm almost 60 now, 58. I'll be 59 in a couple of weeks. In early February. So people in my generation have witnessed the greatest amount of change of any generation in history. from space travel to computers and all this cyber stuff, the race relations, a mulatto president, African father? Oh, come on now. Folks getting married, same-sex couples getting married all over the place. And it's not to say we don't have our problems. But when you've got a Democratic convention and your only two choices for the candidate is going to be a white woman or a black man, you don't even, choosing a white man wasn't even an option. It wasn't even an option. And when Hillary was born, when Hillary's mother was born, women weren't even allowed to vote. Now, I recognize the change seems slow. Mm. But when we realize that in our generations here, that apartheid has gone down, that legal segregation has gone down, that there are so many instances. And I say these things just to remind us that they didn't happen overnight. They happened with a vision, and they happened by people having the tenacity to keep standing up, keep standing forth, and telling their truth. You know, I was on the Donahue Show in 1990, almost 25 years ago, as a female couple who had had a marriage-type ceremony. 25 years ago, when nobody was even talking about it.
Wow.
And all of us are here because somebody had a vision. Because somebody was brave enough. I one of my last sermons, I talked about how there's a very, very thin line between being a pioneer and a token.
That's true, yes.
And when you're in it, you really don't know.
Mm-hmm.
That time will tell. Time will tell. And the difference, the distinguishing factor, is how many people come behind you.
Mm.
A pioneer is paving a way for other people to follow. A token is just getting in.
Mm.
And let's just be pioneering. That's all. Be pioneering. I noticed, you know, for better words, I don't like all the violence of it, but I can't help but notice how many action characters now, particularly in the animated front, the films geared towards children, where the women, where girls are the hero. The girl is the central action figure.
Mm-hmm.
This is a big change. Huge change. We can do it. It's just we got to speak up. Not just complain, but speak up with the truth.
Right.
Just, did you know? You know, nothing in that. remember in one of my sermons not too long ago that was talking about this, not the movie, but how there are all these images that we have in our mind of stuff that really isn't historically accurate. Even the thing about, like, the parting of the Red Sea and more likely would probably actually happen there. And you know, this idea of, you know, Moses, you know, let my people go. And it's like, it didn't happen. It's like, historically, they didn't go down that way. That if you read in Scripture, it says Moses stuttered. Moses didn't say anything. God said, I'll send your brother Aaron. I'll send your brother Aaron to do the talking. Which is just so instructive to me. It doesn't take away from the story to me. It adds to it. To say that when God wants you to do something, even if it looks like you're ill-equipped to do it, God will send whatever you need to get it done. God does not send a burning bush to the wrong person. Whenever we see things that are upsetting us, I recommend that everybody look at it as a prayer request. It's a prayer request. There's something that's trying to come forward here. There's something that's trying to birth itself. The only thing that ever needs to be healed is just a sense of separation, just a sense of separation. So what can I do to help that sense of separation? Not cause more separation, but just a sense of separation. So if the separation is from accuracy and people being invisible, well, maybe I might need to add some visibility to that. You know, and quiet is kept. If you read your scriptures, it says that all those people who were out there in the desert, that they all weren't Israelites. They weren't Hebrews. They referred to it as the mixed multitude. That when they left, hundreds of thousands, I think it was 600,000 people, non-Jews came with them. Which I'm sure probably is not represented in the movie either. It's another one of those historical kind of facts. We always hear that 6 million Jews were killed in the Holocaust. Well, yeah, it's true. But 11 million people were killed. Not just Jews. 11 million people. The elderly. Anybody with any kind of physical impairment. Gay people. In fact, that was one of the first signs of the gay liberation movement, the pink triangle. And it's inverted. People would wear it upside down as a sign of defiance. Gay men were forced to wear pink triangles in the concentration camps, like the Jews wore a yellow star of David. And it became this defiance symbol to say, no, you know, like, no more. And I just believe that the more we enlighten each other about who was really where, like who did what, so to speak, then we get not only compassion, but there becomes a sense of pride. Because when you can't see yourself in history, you don't have any sense of your possibilities.
Mm. You know, Reverend D, I want to jump in here because what you're saying is really important. And earlier when you talked about daily resurrection, that kind of hit me in a soft spot. It's like, ah, that's it. You know, recognizing our oneness, recognizing that we are one with the Christ consciousness. And I had a conversation with someone today, and I want to hear your thoughts on this. We were talking about Ferguson, and we talked about other things, the incident, the protest and everything. She talked about why people attacking the community. And then we went on, and she
people
was talking
attacking
about
attacking the community?
Yeah, why are they attacking their own community, the shops
okay.
and everything.
Right.
And, you know, we talked about that last week. And then she went on to say how she likes to ask questions. And at work, she asked a question because she was putting people who were rioting down. Well, she wasn't talking highly of them. Let me put it that way. And then she talked about at work because she's from Boston and, she likes asking questions. And she said she asked somebody a question and they seemed to be perturbed by the fact that she asked questions. So she told me that she spoke to a friend in Chicago about that. And she said, oh, you know, the people down there, there's still some people that house Negro and the fuel Negro mentality. And she didn't say Negroes, if you get my gist. But as she kept talking, it just hit me that every culture, every society, it seems like we have there's this conditioning, there's something that we agree with that causes us to not really embrace our Christ consciousness. So from the perspective of African Americans, we can always say it's because of slavery, it's because of slavery. Nigerians would say because we were colonized. You know, the British would say, you know, it's because all these asylum seekers are coming over here. The religious people would say, well, it's because they don't let prayer in school or because we all have something that we put. The way I'm looking at it, it's like we all have something that we put as a barrier between ourselves and the Christ consciousness. And you can't tell us nothing. It's like it's obvious. I mean, don't you see it? So for me, when you talked about daily resurrection, and I want to hear your thoughts because I'm thinking, so daily resurrection, an example of that would be, as you're saying, when we see something that triggers a conversation or a mindset that is just fueling the status quo, to be able to have a different conversation, a conversation that moves us forward. Would that be considered daily resurrection?
Well, I hear where you're going, my brother, but you forgot something.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have a daily resurrection without the daily crucifixion. Okay.
No, that's right.
You've got to die daily. You got to start it there. You're dying daily.
What does that look like?
In Taoism, by Lao Tzu, it says, in the pursuit of knowledge, every day something is added. In the practice of the Tao, every day something is dropped. Every day something's dropped. Our Christ consciousness has to be unveiled. It's that you can't get the rope to the eye of a needle.
Mm.
We say camel, but the same word in Arabic that means camel is rope. You know, what it would take to get a rope through an eye of a needle? It has to thin itself out some. Okay? Or I like what Michelangelo said about the David. When asked how could he carve something like that, he didn't see himself carving a stone. He saw the David inside. He says, and I just chipped away what didn't belong.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's what we have to do. So what that means is that every day I have to get rid of some of my prejudice. I have to get rid of some of my bias. If you're looking down your nose at me because I'm black, but then I hate you being white, looking down your nose at me because I'm black, then that's just the blind leading the blind.
Right.
So So the resurrection comes when I'm willing to die to the hatred in me that I hate in you. When I'm willing to become what I want you to be. And all those things about you that are making me crazy, at some level, I'm doing them too. Who's going to be the first to put the judgment down? Who's going to be the first to embrace? Like King says, I don't want to kill you. To the white man, I want to live next door to you. I want our kids to grow up together. That's a different kind of love. And yes, you're going to find anywhere where there are people, as long as we're still on this planet, we are not fully enlightened, you're going to find these hierarchies. Hierarchies based upon something. You know, slavery in Africa did not start with the transatlantic slave trade. Mm-hmm. That did not start there. Black folks were selling each other into slavery for centuries. And I remember crying when the president of Ghana came out, maybe 15 years ago or something like that, and apologized to African Americans, said we didn't know. He said, we had no idea of what was happening. You know, that this was a practice. And that in their country, after 7 years of essentially like indentured servitude, you are required to actually marry into the family. They had no idea what was going on with us across the seas. But it all starts with the same thing. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what the issue is. It's a sense of separation, mm-hmm. Not knowing. Because when you don't know that you're one with God, when you can't feel that, you don't understand your brothers and sisters as sacred. You don't get that you're no better than they are, that you're not favored in any kind of way. And that's this fallacy that we're living under. Is it somehow or another we're more important in God's eyes than my brothers and my sisters? And it's just not true. But to really hear what I'm saying, that it isn't just, I got to quit discriminating against you. I got to stop putting myself up so high. I got to realize I am not God's gift to the world. Given the authority over you. You're equal to me, yes. But the you're equal to me isn't just you're not as low as I thought you were. I'm not as high as I thought I was. That's what's got to die. Judgment has to die. The condemnation has to die. The resistance has to die. The otherness has to die. The competitiveness, the judgment, that's what has to die. Now, when that dies, then you can resurrect into something else. When that dies, what comes out is compassion. Inclusion. Collegiality, collaboration, brotherhood and sisterhood, empowerment. That's what comes out on the other side of that. But we think we can get to that without the dying. We think we can get to equality without ending supremacy. And it doesn't matter if I think I'm better than you. How can I put this? It's like I notice how many metaphysical